The pandemic kind of stole my creativity.
From the Coin Podcast Network studios in Portland, Oregon, this is Six Questions with Emily Burris and Ian Costello.
How was your dentist appointment?
Despite the fact that it was a little bit of an urgent visit to the dentist, I am one of those people who actually enjoys going to the dentist.
Okay.
I think I take pretty good care of my teeth to begin with, but I do like the fresh, clean feel that you get coming out of the dentist. And it turned into a cleaning because what happened is the retainer that is the permanent retainer that has been in my mouth since the early years of the Clinton administration snapped out when I was flossing earlier this week.
Oh, no.
And left some sharp, jagged edges of cement.
Yeah.
In my mouth, and my tongue was bothered by them.
Ooh.
So they cleaned those out and used whatever the dentist's version of a Dremel tool is to file those down, which smelled absolutely horrific.
Oh, I bet.
But then I got a good, you know, I got a cleaning out of the deal. And now, you know, I'm sure my mouth sounds incredibly sparkly and clean.
Yes, I can hear the cleanliness in your voice. Well, no, now you're set for the next 6 months. I too enjoy a good trip to the dentist. I've never really had too much anxiety over it. And yeah, I always get a little, I get a little ego boost, you know, if they say that my teeth look good. And I make the same joke every time when they're like, your teeth look so great. You've got a great smile. I'm like, well, I'll tell my parents. They paid good money for those braces. Ha ha ha. Every single time.
How long did you have braces?
About 2 years.
That was a miserable experience. I remember that not being fun at all.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy going to the dentist when I had braces.
Right. The orthodontist stuff was not fun. And I also have a permanent retainer now, which I am worried about. It's like a little irrational fear of mine. Like, oh, when is this thing going to snap out of my mouth? Maybe it's not so irrational, though. I don't know.
He asked me if I wanted him to put it back in. And I said, absolutely not. I've been hating this thing basically since it went in my mouth. And if my teeth aren't locked in place after having that thing for 27 years, they're not going to stay. So at this point, keep it out of my mouth.
That's fair.
Braces technology seems to have gotten a lot better since I had my braces.
Yeah.
Now they're doing them with the Invisalign and the retainers and the plastic mouthpieces. No more going in there and having the wires tightened and basically feel your teeth getting pulled through the bone.
Kids today will never know what it's like to go in there and get to change your rubber bands to match the color of the holiday.
You bet.
I would get that red and green for Christmas, you know. I only had them on for 2 years in high school and then had to do a couple years with the Invisalign to fix my bottom teeth. And that's when I got the retainer. But yeah, all of the, what did they used to call you? I mean, like brace face and like, you know, kids would get picked on. That was all high school stuff for me.
They're so kind. High schoolers are so nice to each other.
Right. Did you ever have any weird high school jobs or anything? Speaking of high schoolers.
I grew up in a tourist town. So if it was a service industry job between the time I was 13 and the time I was 22, I held it. Stocking shelves, cashier, sweeping parking lots, washing windows, pumping gas.
Okay.
Washing dishes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But weird? No.
I ask because I wasn't sure if you needed a segue, but I was trying to set you up for a little one, you know, because...
Hit me with a segue.
Well, so I worked for a little bit in college, like high school into college, as a seating hostess at a restaurant, right? I feel like a lot of kids, sometimes they'll start off in restaurants and stuff. And that's some tough work. That's some tough work. So I have some respect for this week's guest, considering a bit of his resume, which you guys talked about.
Yeah, Gabriel Pascuzzi, he's been on the climb. He started out, as a lot of people in the restaurant industry do, but he started out doing the things that got him in kitchens, prep cooking and line cooking and cleaning up after the other chefs had gone home for the day. And listening to him talk about that kind of path, I did gain some respect for how hard that climb has been. And I think it became interesting when he mentioned the stuff about a union and his disappointment in the kitchens he's worked in the past.
Yeah.
That wasn't kind of a merit-based situation, because that industry it's entirely merit-based, and we're seeing it as he appears on Top Chef, that if you can do this well, you stick around. It's not who you know. It's not, you know, which restaurateur hired you a long time ago. It's not how long you've been there. If you can cook, you get to win.
He has an interesting take on a few things, and I definitely like appreciate his honesty. It's like really refreshing to hear someone be very, mm-hmm. very to the point about certain things. I feel like his point of view comes across in everything he does, and that's kind of cool to see.
I found it to be quite interesting to hear the perspective of somebody who born here, raised here, started working here, left, and then came back.
He is one of those rare natives, like native Portlanders.
Referred to himself as a unicorn.
Yeah, that's right. Gabe the Unicorn.
Gabriel, thanks for spending some time with me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer Gabriel or Gabe or Chef Gabe or a nickname?
My friends call me Gabe. I always introduce myself as Gabriel. I don't know. I think it's kind of funny because all the people on Top Chef always call me Gabriel. There were two Gabes. But if our last name's initials didn't sound so similar, I would have gone by Gabe. But it was Gabe E and Gabe P. So that would have gotten real confusing anyway.
Real confusing.
So I was just like, just call me Gabriel. I was like, do you really want to go by Gabe or Gabriel? He's like, I want to go by Gabe. I was like, okay, cool, whatever.
We'll talk a little bit about Top Chef in a bit. First, can you walk me through your journey and tell me how Portland became a part of your life?
Dude, I was born and raised here.
So you had no choice. You were Portland from the get-go.
I'm a unicorn, dude. I'm born and raised. Like, I don't know how many chefs can say they're born and raised in Portland that are actually in Portland right now.
How do you think that makes you different from the, not only chefs, but people who came here? Do you think you get a different vantage point of what this city can be?
I think it just gives me a perspective of what it was and what it is now. So I started working in restaurants when I was 16. And when I was in college, I'd come back every summer and work in restaurants here, you know, nothing fancy like McCormick and Schmick's and stuff. I remember once everybody went back to college, it was like dead season in Portland. Everybody went to ghost staffs. The sales were terrible. And you just waited until you got the holiday uptick again. But in between like the first week of September and then all the way until mid-November, you got a little blip and then the holiday party started. And you had to like make all your money during the holidays and during the summer or you were screwed. So it's kind of interesting how Portland's matured into a year-round, you can make it as a restaurant here. It's just way different than it used to be, I guess.
What were those early jobs like in the restaurant? Were you waiting tables? Were you bussing dishes? Did you do a little bit of everything?
First job, I was actually an apprentice. So yes, I got all the jobs. I would go help prep and then I'd have to clean up the prep kitchen. And then I came up to the service kitchen and then I like made the desserts and washed the dishes and then they left and then I cleaned that kitchen. And then the ones in Portland, I was a busser at the Heathman for a couple summers, and I was a line cook at McCormick and Schmick's and the London Grill, which no longer exists. And then I also worked at Five Spice in Lake Oswego. And that restaurant's funny because it's been like the same name, but five different concepts since its inception.
One for each of their spices.
Yeah, I guess.
Just off the top of your head, what's the worst job you've had inside a restaurant?
Worst job I've had? You can't really think of any like jobs I just hated. It was really hard to work at the London Grill because it was union. And so nothing is based on merit. It's all based on how much time you've been there. Like there's one guy that had been there like 20 years and you know, he made a ton of money. He was protected by the union. You couldn't tell him how to cook anything, you know, even if he was doing it wrong. Like he didn't even listen to the chef. Like the chef, it was so frustrating for the chef because they couldn't even have their line cooks do things the way they'd want them. They're just like, nope, just how I would do it. And then like any grievance, they just take it to the union and make life miserable. So it was really weird working at that one. And that kind of made me not ever want to work in a union restaurant.
You'd prefer it to be the meritocracy where, a lot like professional sports. If you're good at what you're good at, you keep growing and you keep moving up rather than just being protected because you've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's that works and it's a slower path, right? There's some people that stay at places for a long time. It's like, you're only going to move to it. You know, you're going to have a ceiling with that, I feel like, as long as you do a decent job. But yeah, I think, you know, kitchens are a meritocracy where it's like, you know, if you're putting in the effort and you're trying to get better, you should be rewarded for it rather than the person that's just like, nah, f*** it. You know what I mean? I think that's all of life, right? Like,
you've been able to, based on your merit and your talent and your acumen, you've been able to rise up in the restaurant world in Portland. In the past several years, you've taken 3 restaurants from conception to open: Mama Bird, Stack Sandwiches, and Feel Good.
Feel Good's not quite open yet.
When are you hoping to get that open?
Next month.
Obviously, COVID played a role in the decision making recently, and we'll get into that in a moment. What's it like to get a restaurant up and running in the competitive landscape of the Portland food scene?
I guess when you make a restaurant, generally, after my first one, it's like finding the white space a bit. And for me, it's more about doing things that I crave. And I figure if I'm looking for it, maybe other people are looking for it. There's so much work that goes into a restaurant. I design my own restaurants too. I don't pay for a design firm to design stuff for me. I spend a lot of time on Pinterest and kind of formulate my ideas of what I want something to look like. I do have a graphic designer that is super amazing, and she does all my branding, and she's really great because we can sit there. She's like, what are you thinking? I'm like, well, yeah, I want it to be, you know, like whimsical and kind of feel, you know, nurturing, but I don't want it to be like too aloof, just very vague. And then she like sends me 5 options and I'm like, whoa, that one's really good. She's like, okay. And then she takes that one and then she, you know, does a couple more based off of the couple that we liked in the first one. And then she always nails it, which is amazing. It's kind of really fun to watch something come out of your head and be, you know, what you want it to be. I think I was really happy with how Mama Bird turned out. It's like exactly in my brain of how I wanted that restaurant to look. But it's, you know, from starting the conversation with landlords, getting through your LOI, getting through your lease, signing it, getting your contractor, and just like making sure you have all your ducks in a row, equipment, smallwares. It's like a 2-year process, I'd say.
Think it's more competitive here than a lot of places?
No. I think it's less competitive, honestly.
What makes you say that?
Well, I mean, I worked in New York City, so that's highly competitive. California, they have like a lottery system to get a liquor license, so that sounds miserable. Honestly, I think the barrier of entry in Portland is very low compared to most cities. As far as like cities that are like considered top culinary cities in America. Because think about trying to open a restaurant in San Francisco or Chicago or New York, or even say throw Miami in there, you know, it's, you're going to spend millions of dollars.
Do you think there's more support for newer restaurants here than there are, say, in a San Francisco or a Miami or a New York? Are there more people in the general public willing to try a new restaurant?
I think being from Portland, I get to say this, there's a love, and I think a lot of chefs feel, maybe I don't want to speak for everybody, but I feel like I've heard this gripe a bit. It's like Portland likes to say they really support restaurants, but when you open a restaurant, it's like the first thing they want to point out and bitch about is like price point, or I didn't feel like I got enough food for my money. And it's like, you know, a lot of these restaurants, if they weren't in Portland, if they were in another city, would be charging twice the price that they're charging. So I think sometimes Portland is spoiled in a way, you know, like the consumer kind of behaves like a spoiled child a little bit and not appreciating how wonderful the food is that they do get to eat.
We touched on it there a minute ago in my question. Obviously, the pandemic is at the top of everybody's mind at the moment. How would you sum up your difficulties for you and your restaurants over the last 18 to 20 months?
How would I sum that up? The least fun I've ever had in my 18 years as a chef. That's how I'd sum it up. It was brutal and not fun. I think everybody, I don't know, personally, definitely had some like trauma and dealing with it. So
how damaging do you think it's been to the restaurant scene as a whole in Portland?
I don't even think we've fully seen yet. I don't know. I mean, there's going to be folks that are okay through the summer, but if we have any sort of relapse in the fall, I don't know how that's going to play out. I mean, you've seen places shut down for good that have been around for 15, 20 years. It's hard to even like grasp how much it's probably damaged, not just Portland, but the restaurant industry in general. Yeah, there's been government assistance. I mean, I got kind of screwed on the first PPP loan. I'm sure other people have too, just because of the way, you know, taxes were filed or payroll. Like I fired everybody in order for them to get on, you know, the show that was unemployment. And then my 941 gets sent out saying I have zero employees. And so when I apply for the PPP loan, they're like, oh, you have zero employees. And I'm like, I had 37 employees. So they gave me a fraction of what I should have qualified for. So I don't even know what other, I mean, I've talked to other restaurants and stuff, and some are like, yeah, we're fine. And some are like, man, we're f***ed. And some are like, it's stressful. Nobody's really having a good time, I don't think.
Do you see things like Top Chef bringing the attention to Portland as something that will help in the recovery of the Portland restaurant industry?
Yeah, for sure. All the news has been this false narrative of like Portland's on fire. Like I had so many stupid messages from friends around the country, like, are you okay? Portland's on fire. I'm like, dude, it's like a 4-block radius that nobody goes to. You know, it's just the, I'm a registered independent, but it was seemed like a very Republican thing to paint Portland, the liberal city, as like this place that was being burned down by anarchy, which is, I mean, just false in my opinion. So I think anything that paints Portland and Oregon in a good light and shows, you know, basically Top Chef is going to highlight all the things that people come, like tourists come here for, you know, because it's going to focus on all the things that Portland and Oregon are known for. So they've done a really good job so far of showing how beautiful and lush Oregon is and highlighting its ingredients.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hear more from Chef Gabriel about his path to Top Chef and what he eats on long road trips.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin 6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin 6 News at 10 on Portland CW. It's our award-winning newscast, 1 hour earlier at 10 o'clock. A full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family from the news team that's watching out for you. Plus, Portland's most accurate forecast certified by WeatherRate from Chief Meteorologist Natasha Stenbach. See why more people are switching to Coin 6 News at 10 on Portland CW. Watching out for you.
Hello, Coin 6 News anchor Emily Burris here. We know your mornings are busy, and we want to help you be in the know as you head out the door. That's why the Coin Podcast Network is bringing you a brand new podcast called The Daily Six. Every weekday, we'll bring you the day's six biggest headlines in a quick and concise report, on demand and on your schedule. So check out the Coin Podcast Network on coin.com or have The Daily Six sent directly to you each day by subscribing to the Coin Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
How does a chef get on to Top Chef? Do they call you and invite you? Is it an application procedure? How do you go about getting on the show to begin with?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm still asking how I got on the show. I think it's a little column A, a little column B, a little column C there. All I can speak to is how I got on there, but I've heard some people they reach out to. You know, it just kind of depends. I applied like 4 or 5 years ago when I was a chef at Maloma Whiskey Library, just on their online, like it's usually like halfway through the season, they'll put up a portal online and you can download a giant, like 70 page application. And it's like 3 days to fill this thing out. So I did that and I got through, I want to say 3 or 4 rounds. Like it was like one more round and I would have been a finalist to be on there. They were just like, just not the right fit this year. Thanks for your time, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, whatever. And I think 2 years ago during the All-Star season that Gregory was on, I kind of felt like I was in a place that I could maybe try again. And so I like looked for this portal and it like wasn't seeing anything. And I was like, what the hell? Obviously, like they're doing an all-star season, so they wouldn't put one up. And I didn't know that at the time. So I went back into my, I'd saved in my like in an email folder, like Top Chef stuff. And so I think I just emailed somebody on there like, hey, I was looking for an application. I don't know if you guys are still doing another season or whatnot. Didn't hear anything back. And then I was, I don't know, I was doing something. I was like in my apartment and I was on my computer doing some work. And all of a sudden something like, you know, bing, new email. And I was like, oh, weird. Wait, from Magic Elves. And I clicked on it. I was like, hey, would you, are you still interested in Top Chef? And I was like, cool. Yeah. And they're like, okay, here's the application. And I like filled out and you had to like gather a whole bunch of pictures and answer a whole bunch of questions and stuff. And then from there, it's like a series of interviews with like, you get the first, you got to make it past the first person and then the second person. And they want you to do like a video and like, it's like a whole thing.
Did any of that application process involve anybody actually eating your food?
No. That's a very good point. I don't know. Maybe, you know, there's a huge, like it's, there's a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think Gregory vouched for me. So I think they'll take those into consideration. I don't know. Like Sarah was like, yeah, they kept bugging me. I didn't want to go on it. I was like, aren't you cool? I mean, it just depends on who you are, I guess.
Speaking of Sarah, you are competing against another Portland chef and Sarah Hammond. Is there a friendly best in Portland competition going between the two of you during the show?
No, I don't think so. And like, she's, I mean, a majority of her career was spent in San Francisco too.
Mm-hmm, true.
I mean, honestly, we didn't know each other. Like it was weird because we have a lot of the same friends, but we never met. And you know, since we've been out, obviously we hang out. And like, I'm good friends with Matt Siegler and my buddy Eric, who owns Pono Brewing. I guess she knows them pretty well. And I was like, how the hell have we not met before this? You know, and she works out in wine country. So I think she's still trying to break into and grow her name in the Portland / Oregon food scene. But obviously, Top Chef is going to springboard that. I am too. I mean, there's Garrett Benedict over at G-Love, and I kind of invited him to a few things I'm doing this year, just trying to help him out. He opened 2 months before Mama Bird, so he's had the same roller coaster. And I'm sure he's just been focusing on trying to make it through, but it's kind of hard to crack into to your earlier question. Like it does feel like there is a core community of like Portland chefs, and it like takes a while before you kind of like break into it, I guess.
Is it a little bit of a click?
I mean, I'd say there are definitely like groups of chefs that hang out with each other. I mean, I guess I'm more trying to think back to when I was at Whiskey Library and first starting, and like, you know, people start to hear mumbles and grumbles, and you might know a couple people, but the longer you're here and the more you do other stuff, you start to run into the other chefs and meet them and walk into the room and be able to like talk to people rather than be like, I don't know anybody in here.
Speaking of that camaraderie, anybody who watches Top Chef sees all of you living and hanging out in a hotel. Are you actually getting along, or is that just creative editing?
We all get along well. Like there's like, we're in a giant group chat. A majority of the chefs are coming back through Portland, you know, just depending on what their schedules allow, to do dinners and stuff. I'm going out to several of the the chef's restaurants and stuff. I mean, I think it's like any world you're in, right? Like you're going to have the people you stay close to and you connect with. You're going to have the people that are just like always good to see them, but you may not keep in contact with them as much. You know, I think everybody kind of walked in there, and we were all in the middle of a pandemic. So everybody was kind of maybe more sensitive to giving everybody a break. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not being so judgmental or like, you know, harping on people, because like people are in the middle of trauma and like dealing with the pandemic as well as being there, and you're trying to not think about being still in a pandemic and what your restaurants are doing, but you have to. So your head's like split in half. And then the people that don't have restaurants are like, what the f- am I going to do? I lost my job. Like, I mean, I feel like it's pretty supportive. I mean, you're going to have like, you know, your sardines packed in a hotel. You're going to have like, oh, I'm just annoyed with that person. Mm-hmm. I think everybody gets that. Like my girlfriend and I go on vacation for 3 weeks and by the third week, we're probably like, all right, let's hang out with some other people. You know what I mean? But I think they more manufacture the drama or make things look more dramatic than they are.
You mentioned that shooting in the middle of pandemic and being kind of maybe giving each other a little bit more leeway than maybe you would have in the years before the pandemic, just because everybody's going through some different kinds of trauma and that kind of thing. And you may not know what somebody else is going through, or you know very well that somebody else has closed a restaurant, lost their job, that kind of thing. And you're trying to be supportive, but did it feel weird to be back around people?
No, I've been around my staff. We have a pretty small, tight staff, and we all talk to each other. And we're like, hey, like, let's all be safe. Like, we're gonna wear masks. Like, if you go out and hang out with people and take your mask off and stuff, like, please don't come around us. Like, have that respect, which I think everybody really adhered to. So I saw a decent amount of people, but it was different to actually hang out and spend time with that many people. And it was also hard to get into like a creative space again. I think a lot of us were struggling with that. I think if you redid this season in a normal time, in a normal house, you'd see a lot different cooking, because I realized it took me months to realize like the pandemic kind of stole my creativity and the portion of my brain that I was using for coming up with new dishes. And it was just like fight or flight, constantly adjusting. How do I keep my business afloat? What can I do to create sales? Like, you're thinking a whole different capacity. And usually, you know, chefs are coming out of their kitchens and hopping straight into, you know, Top Chef. So they're in kitchen shape, if you want to call it that. They're cooking every day. They're creating whatnot. And, you know, a lot of us are not cooking and laid off or doing a super cut down version of what we had been doing, just trying to survive. And then you're there and half your brain's like, you can't even be fully present because you're thinking about a giant movement of Black Lives Matter. And then you have the pandemic. You have, you know, some people had loved ones that had maybe had COVID or were sick or they were worried about because they're, you know, high risk. Like, it was a very hard time to be present in Top Chef.
That's something you don't see. That's something that doesn't come through. And I find that very fascinating, the idea that maybe a year from now or 2 years from now or 4 years ago, you put this same group together, you may have gotten entirely different results, an entirely different basket of food.
I think so, 100%. I mean, I feel like I don't even think I was cooking creatively for a while. I was just cooking from like 18 years of knowledge. You know what I mean?
Gabriel, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I've got a couple quick fires here.
Yeah.
To steal a phrase from the show, but just quick one or two or three word answers. Who's the most intimidating judge on Top Chef?
You got to do one of the three mainstays because they decide whether you come or go. So
I'm scared of Tom and I'm just watching.
I mean, I work for Tom, so I'm used to his his mind games.
A couple more. Late night out on the town. You need some grub. Where are you going?
In Portland?
Yeah.
Joe, we close at 10. You can't go late night right now. Diane Lamb's Psychic Bar is throwing down some really good food. Dude, I haven't been out late night right now. I don't know, Bantam Tavern for some Spam Sliders.
Ooh. Yeah. Long road trip. What's your one must-have snack in the car?
Sunflower seeds.
What flavor?
Ooh. I like Dave's. It's like hot salsa or something like that. Jalapeno hot salsa.
Use it to keep you awake.
So, all right. I've had a lot of, this is going to be a longer answer for you. I've driven a lot across the country. I bought a car in college in Denver and I drove it back to Portland to register so I didn't have to pay the taxes. And then I drove it all the way back down to Austin. And then a year later, I drove Austin to Denver to Portland. So I have experience with this. I don't really eat candy anymore, but this was my setup. I had a Gatorade, an empty cup for a spitter for seeds, a bag of seeds, Starburst, and a thing of water.
That was your fuel for the whole trip?
That was my co-pilot.
Gabriel, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Have a great day.
You too. It's good chatting with you.
You a sunflower seed person?
Honestly, no. And that answer surprised me.
Really? I mean, when I was driving long trips like that earlier in my career, it was coffee and cigarettes. I have now transitioned to the sunflower seeds. And still coffee.
I don't often go for stuff like sunflower seeds or pistachios. To me, the amount of effort for the return, like, it's not a ratio that I approve of. I have to work way too hard to get the actual food out of that deal.
Well, pistachios have a better ratio than sunflower seeds, but I can see it with sunflower seeds. Like, the payoff really isn't there. And he mentioned the jalapeno salsa flavor.
Yeah.
You have to get sunflower seeds with flavor because really that salt and that flavor is the only thing you're getting out of them.
Yeah, that's what you're actually working for. I mean, I get it. Right. If it's like an oral fixation thing or you're trying to just like stay awake or alert, you need something. Yeah, it's not for me. I usually go the high calorie, low effort route of sour gummy worms or chips.
You like a good sour peach, like a peach ring?
Yeah, some peach rings. Oh, how about this one's weird. People never like when I say this, circus peanuts.
Oh.
I eat them.
Oh.
And
you,
I like
them. You and my father-in-law are the only people in the country that still buy those things. I'm convinced of that.
They're always on sale at the gas station. And that's probably because they've been there for 8 years.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Talk to you next week.
The Coin 6 weather team has the most accurate forecast in town, certified by WeatherRate. Coin 6 weather, watching out for you.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin 6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin 6 News at 10 on Portland CW, a full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family. See why more people are switching to Coin 6 News at 10 on Portland CW.